everyone. I'm Gary Nall. Nice to have you with us today. From the University College London comes a new study published in the Journal of Psychopharmacology that says the cannabidiol, that's the non-psychiatric or non-psychoactive part of cannabis, improves blood flow to your brain's hippocampus. Now, that's important. Just a single dose of CBD oil helped to increase blood flow to the hippocampus. That's an important area of the brain associated with memory and emotion, and that is important. So think of all the people suffering from memory conditions like Alzheimer's disease, post-traumatic stress disorder, that could be better targeted in the brain using CBD oil. And again, this is published just now in the Journal of Psychopharmacology. So increasing cerebral blood flow, you bet. Helping with memory, absolutely. And there you have it. Also, a study from Stanford University School of Medicine shows that cabbage juice, yeah, and see if you remember this being discussed on this program years ago, decades ago. The cabbage juice contains compounds that promote stomach health and treat peptic ulcers. Yep, cabbage juice. You can make your own cabbage juice. I don't recommend that because you'd have to use a case of cabbage to make one cup of juice. But the non-salted cabbage juice, yes. I suggest 3 glasses a day for the stomach conditions. But as early as 1950, there had been studies on cabbage juice to explore its potential as a natural treatment for peptic ulcers. And he came up with the term vitamin U, meaning it promotes healing in the intestinal sores. Now, numerous studies support Dr. Cheney's claims about the healing properties of cabbage. So that's important. And cabbage juice helps heal more quickly than modern meds. Peptic ulcers refer, by the way, to open sores that form in the stomach lining or the first part of the small intestine called the duodenum. And they usually develop due to bacterial infections, although in some cases they are caused by frequent intake of pain relievers. And by the way, even aspirin. Remember yesterday I said that we shouldn't be using aspirin, even baby aspirin, because the studies are showing what it does to the heart and to the people die because of bleeding, even from small aspirins. And it destroys folic acid, B12 and B6, which are necessary to keep your homocysteine levels low. Well, that's what cabbage juice does. It helps heal that stomach lining or the first part of the small intestine. That's good. Now, not that it's that important, but there are 3 types of peptic ulcers, namely gastric ulcers, duodenal ulcers, and esophageal ulcers. And I have seen in people that I've taken off caffeine and coffee, the esophageal heals up and GERD goes away in most cases. And the gastric ulcer, of course, is located in the stomach, and then you can have them through your duodenum and esophagus, respectively. So now to a story, and see if you remember this. By the way, this goes back a ways. I have a photograph of Guy Richards, the city editor for the New York Herald Tribune, very respected paper right behind the New York Times for a long period of time. He was one of those really great investigative journalists. And we were working on a project together on the Romanovs. And I would publish a book on the history of the Romanovs and Rasputin, and based upon actual people that I met who were old. I was in my 20s. They were in their 70s and 80s, but they actually were members of the court of Tsar Nicholas II. So that was one of those unique Forrest Gump moments where I'm sitting in New Bedford, and there's Maria Kropotkin and all these other former Russian exiles telling me about what it was like living with the Romanovs or visiting them or relatives of them. and what it was like in Russia at the time and why nobody was paying attention to the starving and what caused the Bolshevik Revolution. In any case, Richards was having problems. For about 3 weeks, never saw him. And then he said, well, I'm having some problems. I'm going to postpone a research. I said, why? He said, I've got these bleeding ulcers. And I said, would you be willing to try something? He said, okay. I said, just take 3 glasses of cabbage juice a day. Within 2 weeks, it was gone. He never had an ulcer outbreak again. His gastroenterologist was surprised by this. Now, normally, an internist would give some form of non-steroidal anti-inflammatory, some COX-2 inhibitor for the peptic ulcers. And that medication can damage the lining of the stomach itself. But glutamine, G-L-U-T-A-M-I-N-E, on the other hand, is a natural antacid that is strong enough to counter the effects of acid-reducing drugs. Now, glutamine, when you get enough of it, it's really good, and that's why cabbage juice is capable of healing, because cabbage also contains a powerful group of compounds called glucosinolates. Gluco, G-L-U-C-O, sino, S-I-N-O, lates, L-A-T-E-S. And these plant nutrients are said to have protective effect against the bacterium Helicobacter pylori, P-Y-L-O-R-I, which is responsible for the majority of cases. In fact, studies link vegetables rich in glucosinolates to the reduced risk of colorectal cancer, esophageal cancer, and mouth and throat cancers. And that's important. The amino acids in glutamine, anything ending in a MINE is generally amino acid, and methionine have been identified as really good for your stomach. And the form that I would recommend of methionine is called methionine S-methyl sulfonium. That's S, the letter S, M-E-T-H-Y-L, second word, sulfonium, S-U-L-F-O-N-I-U-M, or MMS. It stimulates the production of proactive mucosa. It's also equipped with potent antioxidant abilities to combat tissue damage, oxidative stress. So, now you know, but I'll bet some of you remember a long time ago me mentioning about that Guy Richards incident. Now they're proving it in a good study, you know, and over at Stanford University School of Medicine and published in a mainstream peer review publication. So good. Think of the people who've been using it along. You've been on the right side. Also, oxytocin, by the way, oxy, O-X-Y, tocin, T-O-C-I-N, that's your love hormone. That's why petting your pet, dog, cat, bird, being in nature, just in beautiful sunsets, beautiful sunrises, walking on the ocean beaches, being by a lake, glaciers, all these wonderful places, rainforest, even the desert, you end up with these wonderful hormones. Now, if you're with someone you really like being with, holding hands, hugging, you get an extra boost of oxytocin. And that actually becomes addictive. Then you get those good feelings, you want to continue them. Why not, right? And but it's produced by your hypothalamus. And for its involvement in pair bonding and even orgasm, and it can be a strong ally in the control and prevention of osteoporosis, completely separate. This is according to Sao Paulo State University in Brazil. So the more oxytocin you create by feeling good, the better you are at dealing with osteoporosis. And this was published in the Peer Review Journal Scientific Reports. And also today, plant-based meats improve some cardiovascular risk factors compared to red meat. This is Stanford University again. So swapping out red meat for certain plant-based, you know, vegan burgers can improve some cardiovascular risk factors. That's good. Look, a lot of people I work with, we're talking about probably 80%, they don't have it within them to go cold turkey and make major transformations. Instead, they want to do it gradually. There's a risk when you do it gradually because it means you're not fully committed. You're still dealing with uncertainty and staying in your comfort zone, and you've become addicted to sweet and soft and salty and crunchy. And so people have a hard time giving up. So I say, okay, then let's go with some made of some whole skin French fries. But they're not deep fried. They're not cooked at a high temperature. So therefore, all their nutrients and no trans fats, none of that high salt is there. Instead, you can cut your fries, but keep the skin because the nutrients are really in the skin. And you spritz it at the end with either lemon juice or lemon and lime juice. And it gives you a very salty flavor as if you were putting salt, but no sodium. And that's good. Or a veggie burger, when I, show people how to make veggie burgers, it's relatively simple. The problem is getting it to hold together, and that's where most people don't understand how to use kudzu root, which is good, or egg replacer. In any case, it's a substitute. It's a transition, making a gluten-free, vegan, and pizza. It's not a healthy food as such, and it's not up there with your avocado, but it's also not a denaturing food. You can make it even with low heat, 120 degrees, so it's really a raw food, though it has the mouthfeel, smell, and taste using oregano, a slice of garlic, slice of mushrooms, some dried pepper, and then you can use for pepperoni, the mystery meat that never goes old. Anything that won't rot's not good for you. I think common sense should dictate that. But you can use vegan bacon made from tempeh, and the average person would not know they're not eating that. And after all, now they put so darn much cheese in this stuff. Did you look at the commercials? We've got cheese in our crust. In fact, we've got more cheese in our crust than the competition. It's all stupid because you know what they're not doing? Getting a camera. Hey, millennials, this is something you'd love. And everyone else will love it too. In the morning, when you wake up, take a selfie. And then in about 5 minutes, take a selfie again. And just watch how much of your nasal fluids, your mucus, starts to spill out of your nose. How many times you clear your throat. All that little mucus threads bobbing between your lips. And how much mucus you're clearing out of your eyes. You'll probably have to have a garbage bucket to empty it all. And then coughing, hacking, smelly body, bad breath. Hey, photograph it all. Your friends love that. But don't think twice about eating all that cheese. God. Anyhow, so now you know what to do. Eat a veggie burger if you got to have a burger, because it won't be bad for you. And the University of Texas has an interesting study that I read published in Psychological Science in the public interest. And investing time in education in children and early adulthood expands career opportunities and provides progressively higher salaries. It also conveys certain benefits to health and longevity. So being in school, not school over a computer, actually reading a book, not one sentence, and going, that's all I can read. Yeah, I read a sentence. I actually had someone send me a picture of a made bed. Whoa. So you think you're making progress because you made your bed, probably for the first time in your life, and suddenly that's reward time. Love me, hug me, praise me, take a picture, I made my bed. Yeah, no, sorry, it doesn't work that way. That's like, I put on my shoes this morning, I won a medal for finishing the marathon. You didn't do the marathon, you didn't train for the marathon. I know, but I put my shoes on and I tied my laces myself. Whoa. The symbolic reward society. But learning the old-fashioned way by being in school, and they should ban all cell phones, and when people go through withdrawal, put them in a rubber room. Let them bounce off the walls because they can't text something. And just actually ask them, are you here to learn? And if not, let them go. Let them go out into the real world and end up seeing what that's like when they choose not to have an education that allows critical thinking and understand the world and people and cultures we live in. But when you do go to school, and when you want to go to school, and when you're trying to learn in school, you increase your critical and cognitive capacity. That will help you through your entire life, and that's a good thing. Just ask all of us that had a chance of a good education, where nobody did anything that was inappropriate in class, because if we did, we got home. There'd be a parent waiting for us, and we go, uh-oh. We are 16 minutes into our program. That's it on health and nutrition. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, I'm going to play you a clip from Brendan O'Neill. Now, mind you, as I mentioned yesterday, but didn't have a chance to play the clip, he's an avowed Marxist. He's not promoting Marxism. He's, as I wouldn't allow someone to come on here and promote Islam or Christianity or Judaism, the fact that they could be a believer in it and practice it, that's their business. Now, I don't criticize that. Three things you will not hear me promote on this program, and I haven't. Sex, politics, and religion. Whatever you believe, it's your right, your business, and I respect that. But to do something that involves the politics of, let's say, farming or 5G, that's different. That's what we take on. So anyhow, he's an atheist. I'm not. But I don't tell people what I believe because it's my own personal views, as it is yours. So we have an open forum. We don't censor people because they're of a different political or ideological or religious or sexual orientation. That's stupid. Let's hear what they have to say and then decide in what they say, is it reasonable or not? And if it is, in part or whole, we can accept it. If not, we just reject it. So Brendan O'Neill, right after our break. Please stay with us.
Rejoining us is our guest, Harold Melvin in the Blue Notes. Harold Melvin, after reaching his success, didn't stop there. He discovers people also. And the prettiest member of the group, singing, I hope we be together soon. Ladies and gentlemen, Harold Melvin in the Blue Notes featuring Miss Sharon Page.
I just want to say a few words about the nanny state, and particularly I want to talk about what I think is the real problem with the nanny state, which is not simply that it's annoying and illiberal and gets on our wick and stops us from having fun, but that it actually undermines the Enlightenment itself, that it actually represents a reversal of the gains of the Enlightenment and takes us back to a pre-Enlightenment era. Of course, it's completely true that the most immediate impact of the nanny state is to make us angry and to kill our joy, to kill our buzz. You know, the smoking ban is one example, which in Britain is now going even further, and we're now banning smoking in parks, on beaches, on Brighton Beach, where you can walk around naked and pretty much have sex in public if you want. You now can't smoke. So really, there's a comedian in London called Victoria Wood who did this funny skit like 20 years ago about a couple having sex on a train, and British people are so reserved they didn't say anything. But then after they had sex, they lit up a cigarette and someone said, do you know this is not, that you can't smoke in this carriage? That's now actually become true. You can do lots of weird, wacky things in Brighton, which is the capital of decadence in Britain, but you can't smoke a cigarette on the beach. That's really annoying. The attack on drinking, the attack on boozing is also incredibly annoying. Lockouts, limitations to when you can buy a drink, what time you can buy a drink. In Britain, we have a discussion about binge drinking, and the government is always clamping down on binge drinking. You should know that the government defines binge drinking as 4 units of alcohol, which is 2 weak pints of lager. Now, that tells you something about the kind of people who rule Britain now. They think 2 weak pints of lager is a binge. So they've actually redefined drinking as binge drinking. So what most of us consider drinking, they consider binging. Nudging, the nudge state, which in my mind is even worse than the nanny state because it's so cynical and secretive. This idea that the powers that be should nudge us in the right direction, should nudge us towards good health, should nudge us to make the right decisions about how we pay our taxes. Even the right the way in which men aim at urinals is now become a part of the nudge state, where in urinals across Europe they now have little flies, pretend flies, so that you will urinate on them and not spill. And this is part of nudge policy, seriously. This is part of the actual nudge policy to nudge us towards good behaviour, because we're all such animals. And it completely circumvents public democratic discussion and just assumes there's a right way to behave, and the only role of us lot is to be nudged in that direction. So, it's annoying, it's grating, it's illiberal, it's killjoyish, all those things are absolutely true. But it's not enough to say that. I think there's a far more profound problem, which all of this crap represents a reversal of the Enlightenment itself. The birth of the modern democratic era is being undone by these people, by the nanny state, by the nudging state, by the new bureaucratic authoritarian elites that run the Western world. And if you had to sum up the Enlightenment, I would say the whole message of the Enlightenment was that we have to restrict the government's authority over individuals, over both our bodies and our minds. Both our bodies and our minds should be free from external intervention. That's the Enlightenment, summed up in one sentence. Every single serious document and tract and thesis of the Enlightenment had that message at its heart. And it's not surprising that the Enlightenment comes after the Inquisition, because the Inquisition represents possibly history's most shocking intervention into people's souls, into their minds, into what they thought, into what they believed. Nothing was private. Everything was open to policing and punishment. You could be burnt at the stake for what was in your mind. So after that calamity, that historical calamity, comes a new idea, an enlightenment, that people should be free to think what they want and actually to behave pretty much how they want. So one of the first expressions of this new idea came from Edward Coke, who was this great English jurist who basically brought the Magna Carta into the modern world, one of my heroes. He said, "No man shall be tried upon his secret opinion." This was the post-Inquisition message. No one should be tried or punished for his secret opinion, for what he thinks, what's in his mind. It was a revolutionary idea in the 1600s when he said it. And today, again, when you have Barry Spurr being sacked from the University of Sydney for his secret opinion, for what's in his mind, for what he says to his friends in private, it has become, once again, a revolutionary idea to say that no man should be tried or punished upon his secret opinion. Then later on, you have John Locke, his letter on toleration in 1689, which is basically the founding document of the modern Enlightenment. That whole letter is about, in Locke's words, settling the bounds that lie between the business of government and that of freedom of thought. He basically wanted to stipulate that you have individuals over here and you have the government over here, and they should leave us alone. He said the government should only be concerned with outward things, the structure of society, the collection of taxes, various other things like that, but never with inward things, by which he meant our beliefs, our thoughts, even our bodily integrity. There's a really interesting line in Locke's Letter on Toleration where he says, "If a man is making himself ill, should a doctor have the right to intervene?" And Locke says no. Because we have to take individual sovereignty so seriously that people should even be free to make themselves sick. And then we move on to Kant, another one of my heroes, Kant and his essay, What is Enlightenment? If you read What is Enlightenment now, it's hilarious because it is basically an argument against the nanny state. It's basically Kant arguing in the 1700s against the nanny state. And Kant complains about the fact that he says, "I have a book that thinks for me, a pastor who acts as my conscience, a physician who prescribes my diet." He goes on and on about these nannying people who want to run his life and tell him what to think. And he calls them guardians. And he says, "These guardians treat us as domestic cattle." And he says, "They carefully prevent us from taking a single step without the leading strings to which they have fastened us." Now, if that sounds familiar, that's because it is echoes brilliantly the kind of system that we live under today. We have We may not have pastors who think for us anymore, but we certainly have experts thinking for us, parenting experts telling us how to parent, anti-smoking experts telling us how much we should smoke. The same kind of phenomenon exists, the same guardians exist, they just express themselves in a different way. Kant could have been writing about Australia in 2015. It's really worth rereading his essay. And then these ideas are taken even further by John Stuart Mill, who then sums them up brilliantly when he says, the individual should be sovereign over himself. And that's his very famous line, the individual should be sovereign over himself. But there's a little clause in there which sometimes gets left out, which he says, the individual should be sovereign over himself, over his own body and mind. So what you have here is a real articulation of the idea that both our thoughts, our minds, should be free from external interference, and so should our bodies. So should our own person, the fact that we should be able to do to ourselves what we want. And famously, Mill said that it's only when you harm another person, not when you harm yourself, only when you harm another person that the state should have the right to interfere with you. So that is an extremely potted history of Enlightenment thinking, but the same argument comes through, right through Coke to Locke to Kant to Mill, which is this idea that the individual should be sovereign over himself. And I think what we have today is a complete reversal of that on so many different levels. And for me, the thing that summed this up best is not just the drinking stuff and the smoking stuff and all those irritating rules and regulations, but the comments made by the Nudge Unit in Downing Street. Downing Street now has, inside Downing Street, there is something called a Nudge Unit, which is devoted to changing citizens' behaviour. You know, in the old days, citizens would elect a government and then the government had to do what the citizens wanted it to do. Now, in a complete reversal, the government does what tells citizens what it thinks they should do. And this Nudge Unit says that it wants to be the surrogate willpower of the people of Britain. It wants to be our surrogate willpower. And what that means, it wants to think on our behalf and act on our behalf and carve us into the kind of moral, physical, healthy creatures that it thinks we should be. And that takes even further the phenomenon that Kant was talking about, these guardians who are constantly breathing down our necks, telling us how to think, telling us how to behave. It takes it to another level. And I think... So what we're seeing is not simply the...
Those are some of his views, Brandon O'Neill. Now, today we have the nanny state on steroids. Right now, everyone's life in the United States, indeed most of the world, is controlled by technocrats and bureaucrats who tell you you must stay at home. In New York State, it was a deadly decision by the government and those around him saying, take a nursing home patient that is sick to a hospital, but then bring them back with COVID to the nursing home, and every person in that nursing home who's sick dies. Thousands upon thousands, in fact, more senior citizens died because of infection with the COVID virus than died in 9/11. That got our attention, 9/11. That was an enemy from outside. What do we say about the incompetence and indifference of those who feel that as long as we're politically covering ourselves. We've identified everyone. You can't sue anyone for their incompetence, so it doesn't matter. Now you have groupthink, and the groupthink is led by younger people in the streets, but older and more manipulative people behind the scenes. This is Yale professor, Dr. Rich, R-I-S-C-H. He's an MD and a PhD, is considered one of the top epidemiologists, medical doctors in America, 300 peer-reviewed published papers, and his latest article defending hydroxychloroquine, was published in their journal. And here is a Dr. Kulvinder Kaur, K-A-U-R, medical doctor, board certified, quote, tens of thousands of COVID-19 patients are dying unnecessarily when hydroxychloroquine given very early before SARS-2 has time to multiply beyond control, it has shown to be highly effective. Reality demands a clear scientific eye on the evidence, end quote. She is not the only doctor, and it's not just some doctor's patients. There are now studies on this, showing a tremendous amount of benefit if taken at 200 milligrams with two other ingredients, an antibiotic and zinc at the same time. For example, we're now saying, okay, that's no good, but it is good. It's better than anything else out there, and it's inexpensive, and it has the results. But we're not promoting that in the media, so what the media doesn't tell us, we don't believe. Quote, PCR testing cannot tell the difference between benign common cold coronaviruses and the COVID-19 coronavirus. This is from Joanne Rose in Global Research. The following is from a medical forum. The author is a widely respected professional scientist in the United States, prefers to stay anonymous. Understand that. He said, quote, I work in the healthcare field. Here's the problem. We are testing people with any strain of coronavirus, not specifically COVID-19. There are no reliable tests for a specific COVID-19 virus. There are no reliable agencies or media outlets for reporting numbers of actual COVID-19 virus cases. This needs to be addressed first and foremost. Every action and reaction to COVID-19 is based on totally flawed data, and we simply cannot make accurate assessments. This is why you're hearing that most people with COVID-19 are showing nothing more than cold, flu-like symptoms. That's because most coronavirus strains are causing nothing more than a cold or flu-like symptoms. The few actual novel coronavirus cases do have some worse respiratory responses, but still have a very promising recovery rate, especially for those without prior issues, meaning other illnesses. The gold standard in testing for COVID-19 is laboratory-isolated purified coronavirus particles free of any contaminants and particles that look like viruses but are not, that have been proven to be the cause of the syndrome called COVID-19 and obtained by using proper viral isolation methods and controls, not the PCR that is currently being used, or serology, meaning antibody tests, which do not detect virus as such. PCR basically takes a sample of your cells, amplifies any DNA to look for viral sequences, meaning bits of non-human DNA that seem to match parts of a known viral genome. The problem is the test is known not to work. It uses amplification, which means taking a very tiny amount of DNA and growing it exponentially until it can be analyzed. Obviously, any minute contamination in the sample will also be amplified, leading to potentially gross errors of discovery. Additionally, it's only looking for partial viral sequences, not whole genomes, so identifying a single pathogen is next to impossible if you can ignore the other issues. The Mickey Mouse test kits being sent out to hospitals at best tell an analyst you have some viral DNA in your cells, which most of us do most of the time. It may tell you the viral sequence is related to a specific type of virus, say the huge family of coronaviruses. But that's all. The idea these kits can isolate a specific virus called COVID-19 is nonsense. And that's not even getting to the other issue, viral load. If you remember, the PCR works by amplifying minute amounts of DNA. It therefore is useless at telling you how much virus you may have. And that's the only question that really matters when it comes to diagnosing illness. Everyone will have a few viruses kicking around in their system at any time, and most will not cause illness because their quantities are too small. For a virus to sicken you, you need a lot of it, a massive amount of it. But PCR does not test viral load and therefore cannot determine if it's present in sufficient quantities to sicken you. So that's just some of this article, but it's important, and he's not alone. There are many other scientists saying the same thing. This is from Stacy Lennox. Six questions an honest, intelligent reporter would ask Dr. Fauci about. And then she goes through this about how is COVID-19 a novel virus? No, he has not explained that. No one has. Coronavirus. And number two, why should we worry about COVID mutations, which are occurring? So if you've got a mutation in the virus, what does that say is going to be the efficacy of a vaccine? Because the vaccine will not be mutating. Number three, doesn't COVID-19 behave like SARS? Why? Because SARS and COVID-19 have a spike protein that uses angiotensin-converting enzyme, or what's called ACE2 receptors, to enter the respiratory tract cells, right? I understand COVID-19 may be more efficient at doing this, but the cell entry is highly similar. The method of cell entry was documented in the same as SARS in the January 23rd, 2020 journal of the Journal of Virology. Number four, why not give patients hydroxychloroquine and zinc? In 2005, the National Institutes of Health did a study on chloroquine that found it was effective in inhibiting and eliminating the SARS virus in vitro. It affected the functioning of the ACE2 receptor. It also, with zinc, allowed the zinc to more efficiently enter the cell. In 2010, a National Institute of Health study demonstrated zinc interfered with the replication of coronaviruses. What is the scientific basis to reject its use in the outpatient setting where there are significant observational studies indicating it's effective in early use? And doesn't the wide range of symptoms make sense? Anyhow, these are questions not being asked by anyone in the media for whatever reason. But without those answers, we are once again chasing an illusion about trying to help us. And by the way, guess what? Who said, quote, most U.S. tests, meaning the antibody tests, are completely garbage? Bill Gates, in an interview with Steve Levy with Wired.com. Yeah, okay. So since all the world has been using these garbage tests from the beginning, then all the numbers of COVID positive have to be suspect or thrown out. You have not accounted for what are called the negative or positive factor, meaning you could be antibody positive, but it's a false positive, or antibody negative, meaning you don't have the virus, but you do have the virus. These are notoriously inaccurate. We've been saying this all along. It's interesting to see that Bill Gates is now saying this. And by the way, green tea and zinc is proving to be right up there with hydroxychloroquine at fighting coronavirus infections, according to a recent article that I just got in today and took a look at. Interesting. But no one's focusing on any of that. Oh, and by the way, a nice article by Jordan Schachtel in The Mass Illusion. It's entitled, Sweden Resists COVID Hysteria. No lockdowns, no masks, no vaccine, no problem. Their long-term strategy is working. Quote, here in the United States, we have become inundated with tales of COVID-19 doom and gloom. In America, the mainstream narrative is rife with hopelessness. We are told that there are simply no way to stop this virus without repetitive lockdowns, healthy quarantine, even of asymptomatic individuals, and universal mask mandates. And even with all those extreme policy measures put in place, the politicians and health public health officials tell us that we will have to wait for a vaccine for the country to even think about our new normal following the COVID-19 pandemic. There's one country that don't seem to want to talk about, Sweden. And for good reason, Sweden debunks the hysteria. Sweden shows how unnecessary all the interventions to fight the virus are. Sweden shows us that a rational, evidence-based approach to the pandemic is now thriving. In Sweden, there's no mask, no lockdown, no vaccine, and proper distancing, and most important, no problem. Life has largely returned to normal in Sweden, and he goes on from there. Yet will you hear anything about this article, which is fully documented, by the way? All the graphs and charts and all of the references are fully represented in this article. You won't hear a thing about this, because any good news about COVID is bad news for the political agendas. And that's the reality of it. I'm Gary Knoll. We're 40 minutes into our program. Joe Biden selected Kamala Harris. Hey, great selection, Joe. And not Joe. Joe doesn't have the imagination. He probably has already forgotten her name. They have to, you know, give him a little cue cards. Your vice president candidate is Kamala Harris. But shouldn't we do just a little historical review to see, is she the best person to run the country because she and a group around her would be running the country. She has called, she's been called the female Obama. Okay. She was Attorney General of California, but she was not progressive. There's a Jacobin article about her calling her two-faced. Some of her progressive achievements are matched by a conservative regressive one. She's been a champion of the old tired tough-on-crime rhetoric started by the Clintons. She's put a lot of people of color in prison. For a long time, she was urged to move forward with criminal justice reforms. She chose not to. She ignored them, and that angered human rights activists, and that she failed and would ignore to uphold wrongful convictions that were based on police misconduct, including the police tampering with evidence and false testimony. In one case, a police lab technician had 600 cases filed against her, and she fought against prosecution. She lost. That means Kamala Harris backed the person who made the mistakes in 600 cases. Many cases where she upheld harsh sentencing even after evidence proved people were innocent. Daniel Larson, 28 years to life for concealed weapon, although trial lawyers were found to be incompetent. Johnny Baker, murder conviction after judges found prosecutor gave false evidence. Kevin Cooper, death row inmate. Harris opposed his request for DNA testing to be proved innocent. George Cage, with no criminal record, who was charged many years later with sexual abuse of a stepdaughter. Cage was convicted, although the prosecutor withheld evidence, including medical reports showing that the stepdaughter had a long history of being untruthful with law enforcement. Her mom called her a pathological liar. Harris defended the conviction all the way up to the U.S. Appeals Ninth Circuit Court, a huge supporter for pushing family DNA testing and collecting anyone arrested, regardless of whether they were charged or not. She wanted the police to have your DNA. And such a policy is banned in Canada, and some states like Maryland and D.C. have outlawed the practice. She's a strong proponent of civil asset forfeiture, and as you've heard me do about 50 shows on civil asset forfeiture, the police in many states can just stop you, take all the money you have, take your credit cards, debit cards, and withdraw all the money into their bank account. They get to keep this. They can take your car if they like it. They can take your business if they like it without you ever being charged or even given a ticket or a warning. She supports asset forfeiture. She sponsored a bill to allow prosecutors to seize assets before charges are even filed. So you're guilty before any conviction. And Kamala Harris. She opposed an earlier bill to reform asset forfeiture. The bill passed, but then later Harris helped law enforcement groups to scuttle it. She refused to reduce sentences, including drug possession, for minor low-level felonies. And she wanted to keep people, including people of color, in prison for years for marijuana. She had been overly supportive and trusting of law enforcement, and her record makes her anti-Black Lives Matter, or what other organization she supports, is in contradiction to that. She refused to support bills to standardize body cameras on police. She opposed the bill requiring her own office to investigate shootings involving officers. And I think that there's a lot of people who will see the truth in her. She supported legislation that habitually truant elementary school kids could be prosecuted, and this would have most affected low-income minorities. She appealed against a federal judge ruling that death penalty was unconstitutional. And there were 740 men and women on death row when she was attorney general. She opposed marijuana reform for recreational use, all right, but then bragged about using it in her own biography. Well, that's Bill Clinton and that's George Bush. They can use drugs, you can't. It's okay for them. That's just a tiny amount. You know, of what I know. She is a leading supporter of AIPAC and the Zionist lobby in Washington. And so anyhow, we know who she is. I hope that the average person does as well. And then if you want to vote for her, that's your right. Vote for whoever you want. I'm just telling you, there's a lot there. We got something back in inventory finally after about 6 months. Super antioxidant, 90 vegan capsules. Now, why is this important for everyone every day? Because antioxidants are the molecules that protect against free radical damage in your body. And free radicals contribute to oxidative stress, which is thought to play a role in the development of inflammatory illnesses and immune deficiency disorders. Now, I put 36 different superstar vitamins, minerals, herbs, amino acids, and whole food concentrates into this antioxidant activity. I mean, you're getting everything in here, from lycopene and L-carnosine and rosemary leaf and tocotrienols and citrus bioflavonoids and rutin and bilberry and all of the anthocyanins, red wine concentrate, grape skin extract, Chinese green tea, reduced glutathione, L-cysteine, coenzyme Q10, N-acetylcysteine, alpha-lipoic acid, superoxide dismutase, taurine, pine bark, broccoli stems, lutein complex, cabbage leaf, carrot root, milk thistle, vitamin C, vitamin E, ascorbyl palmitate, magnesium ascorbate. Yeah, it's all in here. Vitamin A. It's non-GMO, it's vegan, and it's gluten-free. And it's the super antioxidants. So this is one of those unique products that I believe everyone should take every single day. I know I do, because you care about yourself. Now, I make no claims, but I can just say all you have to do is Google any one of the ingredients, 36 ingredients, and you'll see why the synergy of bringing them all together can make a huge difference. So what we're going to do is give you a number. Please call this number and get your super antioxidant. It's been out of stock for 6 months. We got it back in. The most anyone can order is 2 bottles. Because we didn't get a lot in, but we got more than 1,000 bottles, but not what I wanted. Call 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. Put super antioxidants into your body every day. Now, we have no calls. Okay. So what we're doing is we're coming up. We were full as of last week. Then a couple from Canada and a person from Great Britain who were coming in for an anti-aging study couldn't. So Luann said we have room for the 2 weeks at the last 2 weeks of all October for our new anti-aging advanced protocol. It's an accelerated protocol. Because I believe that we can do a lot more with highly motivated people who are very disciplined in 2 weeks than people who might not be disciplined or take a long time to finally decide that, yeah, they want to give some stuff up they shouldn't have and want to do things that are going to take them out of their comfort zone. So if you'd like to consider yourself being a part of this historic anti-aging accelerated group, the last 2 weeks of October, I'll be there guiding it every day along with a full staff. And this is the best that there is, then you'll give Luann Panessi a call. Luann's number is 903-881-7008, 903-881-7008. But I was just told we have John on the line from California. Hi, John.
Hi, Gary.
And John was at not only the last one in October, November, December, but also came back in the latest one. March, April, and May. Nice to have you with us. John, tell people we have not spoken, right?
No, we haven't spoken.
So tell people what the experience was, what you saw in yourself and what you saw in other people.
Well, what I saw in other people, a number of things over the years. I have been there at the anti-aging retreats and a couple of retreats. I saw a man who came in with a leg wound and was told that if he didn't have his leg amputated, he was going to die. He came there, he was treated, and the leg came back to life and gave him life. I saw people with Alzheimer's, Efren, Conchetta, who came in with that Alzheimer's stare. And after a few weeks, they started to engage in speech. Ephraim was able to carry on a long conversation with you. It made a lot of sense, had great sense of humor. He had none. Conchetta was in a wheelchair, and she spoke basically Italian the whole time, and again had that that Alzheimer's stare. And at the end of about a month, she was laughing and singing and dancing in her wheelchair, and when made eye contact, where before she didn't. I saw a young man, I forgot his name, with advanced MS, and he couldn't stop shaking, he couldn't feed himself, hold a spoon. At the end of, well, I think it was just maybe a couple of weeks, he was able to feed himself. His eyes couldn't stop fluttering. He really couldn't see people. He sort of saw a blur of people, and his eyes stopped fluttering. And he told his mother, he said, you know, Mom, I know you were beautiful, but I didn't know you were this beautiful, because he actually could see her for the first time in many, many years. I've seen women who come in with stage 4 breast cancer who had no energy, no appetite. And at the end of like a month, had more energy, had an appetite, had much more of a will to live. Personally, I came in with a lot of anxiety, depression, low self-esteem, lack of self-confidence. For years was diagnosed with clinical depression, was on all kind of SSRIs, antidepressants. And now I'm on none. Zero. And I learned tools to overcome all of these. And if I go down, as sometimes I do, I just take a step back, go to neutral, breathe, and use some of the tools, meditation, laughter, getting out in nature. That's the one thing that's so wonderful about being there. That's why I'm coming back in October to be a part of the staff, is that it's so beautiful there. It's just you're surrounded by beauty and nature, positive energy. The animals, the peacocks, the guinea hens, the jennies, female donkeys, swans, all kinds of birds, hawks, eagles, butterflies, and just quiet and nature all around you. It's very difficult to be negative in that positive energy. I power walked a marathon with a man, Ron, who has COPD and a form of leukemia. And we power walked a marathon. It was my first. I believe it was his second. So these things are incredibly inspiring. I don't think I've ever seen anyone who's come there with negative energy and leave with negative energy. Everyone leaves with some form of positive energy. It may be small, may be incremental, some may be larger. But everyone leaves more physically fit, emotionally fit. You have enormous support in all of phases there with Shelley, who's going to be our chef again, cooking fantastic vegan food. John Q, who does exercise. John Q is so full of energy. It's just unbelievable energy. Elaine, who gives you massage. Michelle, Marshall, who does landscaping, makes everything magnificently beautiful. So that's what I've witnessed, just a few things. I could go on and on.
Okay.
I remember Katinka, 94 years old, could hardly walk a quarter mile. At the end of a couple months, walked 4 miles.
But also almost doubled her body bone mass percentage, where her doctor said not to go because she could break her bones just sitting down. And we increased her bone strength and reversed her osteoporosis. Mind you, we've never treated anyone there. You know, when I'm there, I have no idea who's coming. We're not there to treat disease. We're there to promote wellness, a completely different process. One is based upon allowing a person to understand that they have choices with consequences. Up to that point, and I never question a person about their background. I never ask you a question. I never ask the person with multiple sclerosis. I've never asked anybody about their background, because that's not what's important. Everybody masters the defense of their story of woe. And I can't change any of that. What I can help a person do is be a part of their support going forward from today. You're not a victim today. You're here today. What can we do today to honor life and you and open yourself up to your healing? That's what's important. So you've seen that too, John. And I'm glad that you have. So many times. Well, we look forward to seeing you back there in October. Thank you.
I can't wait, Gary. I'll see you soon.
Good. And if you would like to join John, it won't be a large group because I don't like too many people. I like to be able to see everybody gets quality time. Give Luann a call. Her number is 903 801-7008, 903-881-7008. We have two places left in the anti-aging group and one place left in the health retreat, both of which are going to go on at the same time. The health retreat, you don't have any protocols. You can do as little or as much as you want. You can de-stress, detoxify, cleanse, rebalance, meditate, yoga, exercise, aerobics, nature, great food, juicing all day. There you're just very leisurely. There's a high level of discipline in the anti-aging program, but they're both going to go at the same time. For all of you, thank you for listening and have a nice day.